You are listening to American soprano Mabel Garrison sing the classic Southern anthem, Dixie. It is two types of spotty. One is that it's on YouTube, and so you're getting some YouTube spottiness. This is also a, like, wax cylinder recording.
Is it still acceptable to listen to enjoy the song, or is this like the Confederate flag?
I think this one gets literally grandfathered. Because this was an old song then. This was, I think, before the Civil War was around.
Yeah.
You know where the word Dixie comes from? Ooh, I brought this up and now I'm trying to see if I
can. You don't actually know.
Remember. No, I used to know. Dixie comes from Dix, D-I-X, which is 10 in French.
Okay.
And that was... Okay, now I don't... I can't finish that
something about 10?
Yeah. Something about 10? Was it a $10 bill? The $10 bill seems like very, very high value.
At the time, yeah, that would be like...
Yeah, maybe it was like a 10-cent piece?
Yeah, like a $100 bill, though, right?
Right, but there was something about 10 that people hung on to. Maybe they were big fans of the metric system down south.
Well, there's another verse to this.
I'm going to... We're done with that. We don't need two verses.
All right, so Confederate flag, no. You can't have the Confederate flag.
No.
Anymore. They can't show Dukes of Hazzard kind of thing.
No.
But that song is still okay?
I think that song is still okay, especially when it's being sung by a wonderful soprano.
Mm-hmm.
Although I can't really necessarily tell. It sounds very operatic to me. But I don't know if that's, like, good or not. You know, I don't know if other opera singers are listening to this, oh, she's flat, or, oh, she's taking all the easy ways out of this song.
Yeah, I think opera's one of those things where it's like, you know, people who know opera know, but you can I could be easily tricked. Same thing with tap dancing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you make noise with your feet, I'm just going to assume you're good.
Watch this. I'm going to tap dance right now.
Oh, well, look at that.
Woo! Woo, I'm on fire!
You're good.
Thank you.
You're good. You're making a noise.
That was actually my pen on the table.
And you're making a noise, therefore you must be good.
Right? That's all it is. It's really easy. All you people have taken years of tap are now trying to kill me. Oh, speaking of which, I believe we have another correction. Right?
Yes, I've been sent two corrections.
Ah,
actually,
okay.
Two. Number one, in an early episode, you talked about Ernie Borgnine.
Yes.
Now, Ernest Borgnine, you said he was born as Ernest Borgnine. No stage name. Not true.
Oh,
I checked. His real name is Hermes Bornino.
Oh, is that? It's not Italian.
Bornino, what? Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know where Hermes is.
He's a Python, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, I knew he's Italian. Oh, I knew that.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I could tell he was. I knew that.
I thought maybe he was a Yugoslavian.
Why?
Because not everyone can be Italian. When you grow up in North Jersey, anyone knows a vowel at the end of their name, you just assume, oh, they're Italian.
There's Hispanics with vowels there, too.
Yeah, but if you met an olive-skinned guy and his name was Barillo, would you think, oh, maybe that guy is Albanian? Or would you just go, no, Italian.
Italian, yeah.
Italian.
Hermes Borgnine. So, no, he's Hermes Bornino. He's an Italian-American.
Okay.
And, so Ernest Borgnine was his stage name.
Aha.
Yeah. You're Here's the thing. I don't mind this, like, spreading falsehood about, like, World War I.
Right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, who cares?
But yeah, but the Ernest Borgnine really should be getting it right. like, this is our, like, CBS, you know, Dan Rather moment where we're putting out incorrect news that, you know, just serves to undermine the entire institution of the Fourth Estate.
Well, speaking of news, we need to cut to a commercial break. Our sponsor this week is Spirella Corsets. Spirella Corsets will give you lithe, uncorseted grace and constant comfort, yet mold your figure to the present fashion. They are fitted to your measure in your own home by a trained corsetier, the Spirella way.
Mm-hmm.
A telephone call or postcard will bring an expert to your home to explain the Spirella service and boning in detail. That's the Spirella Corset Shop. Call Cor E. Carr, St. Paul, Minnesota.
So they actually do, like, home fittings of
fittings, yes.
Of a corset.
Yes, and I believe the home fitting is actually called a boning. Which is the first of many words this week that have alternate meanings nowadays.
Well, even a corset, like, this was just a normal garment
Right.
To wear, whereas now it's, you know, you're into some kink.
Right. And I think even back then they weren't using all whalebone because I don't think they were whaling anymore. We had found oil decades earlier. Mm-hmm. We didn't need whales and didn't have all this extra whalebone sitting around like, well, we got to do something with this. Mm-hmm. And this ad for Sperla corsets, by the way, the word corsetier is great.
Did you say that right? Or you're just guessing you did?
I'm guessing I did. I've never heard the word
before. Well, we got Borgnine wrong. I don't want to get corrected on this as well.
Right. But maybe that'll be how we reach the masses. We just start saying really incorrect stuff. 1917 was the year Abraham Lincoln rode a dinosaur and saved Noah's Ark.
I have a feeling there's been lots of incorrect stuff stated so far in our six or seven weeks we've done these. But Ernest Borgnine's real name is the only one that my friends know. I know that we don't know any actual people with the ability to correct any of the historical stuff.
Right. If we start talking about like the New York Giants history, then we'll get corrected.
Yeah, we're going to get that. Like some sports.
Right.
But yeah, we can pretty much say whatever the hell we want historically.
Oh, I wanted to let you know more of the 100-year-old language differences. Mold was still spelled M-O-U-L-D.
Mm-hmm.
That the U's were still very English. We hadn't Americanized them yet. And postcard was hyphenated, which is great old-timey stuff.
You know, I accept that there's alternate spellings in you know, Canada and you know, Great Britain of, where they, you know, color, for example.
Okay, yeah.
But it still gets me angry when I read it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Oh, I like it. It's like a warm bath that reminds me that the world's just a little different.
No, I look into this, I'm like, so you think you're better than me?
No, it's that was the old spelling, mm-hmm. and we're rocking the new spelling, mm-hmm. even though the new spelling is, like, you know, over 100 years
ago. I guess, you know what it is? It kind of reminds me of, like, years ago, like, you know, like during college, you'd have the one friend who went away to Europe to study for a semester.
Yeah.
And they come back, and suddenly, like, everything's, like, kilometers to them.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, like oh, you got to take four clicks over that way. And, you know, they would anger me, these people.
Hey, you want to go to a Taco Bell? You know, Taco, that's how they say it in España.
Yeah, so they would go away and then come back very worldly.
Yeah,
and they would accidentally like every once in a while would slip into like oh I have to use the loo. It's like oh I forget I say I've been away for 3 months and I've changed everything I've learned in the past 20 years in those 3 months.
You just want them to go back to the way they were.
Yes,
stop pretending.
Yeah, and when I see the U, even if somebody's actually British,
mm-hmm.
in my mind it's like I don't, I'm like, oh, this is a an American pretentious person.
Okay, I can buy that.
Yeah.
I can definitely buy that. I will admit, though, that on the times I've driven south and west and gone to other parts of the country, I have, without meaning to, started to change my accent. Mm-hmm. And it made me start to think that accents are this sort of like regional thing. That's like it's something in the water or the air. That anyone who's in like a certain area, like in the Ozarks, will start speaking and draw on their vowels out a little bit more and taking a little more time.
Well, I've noticed that what we consider like the southern accent,
uh-huh.
for example,
yeah.
is kind of just a rural accent. Because yeah. like if you go to like Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
like parts of Pennsylvania, like around Allentown. Or like Harrisburg, there'd be people with a southern accent. There's like go to upstate New York.
Yeah. So how did we decide to call the southern accent when people in all 50 states are using it?
Yeah, like upstate New York. If in a rural part of upstate New York, they have the southern accent.
Yeah. Okay. We're moving on to the news of the week.
No, I want to keep ranting. I don't want to talk about the news. Damn it.
Well, okay. This is something that I needed to decide. I think we need to make a judgment call that we can't just talk about atrocities every single week.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were two atrocities that happened this week. There was the Archangel explosion in Russia, and there was the sinking of the SS Mendi. And this is how bad these two were. In like any other year, these two things individually would be like one of the biggest terrible events. And they happened like one day across from each other. So on,
I'd say like major sinkings of ships come in threes.
Oh, maybe it was.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yes.
Okay. So
that's the old saying.
Okay, so there's a ship in the port of Archangel, Russia, and it blows up, and it's an ammo ship because that's the recurrent theme of 1917. Ammunition blows up and everyone dies. Mm-hmm. There's not even a war needed. So 1,500 Russians died, and that's just an estimate. And the very next day, the SS Mendi, which is a British-owned ship, got sunk by, I believe, a Russian U-boat, and about, looking it up, 646 people died. So within 2 days, 2,000 people, over 2,000 people died. And we can't just talk about the deaths forever. As bad as the deaths are, the distance of 100 years lets us look at it and say...
And have a good laugh at it.
Well, not have a good laugh, but realize that sometimes terrible things happen and lots of people die. But unfortunately, unless the country or the world responds to it and changes, unless it becomes a Pearl Harbor, it just sort of gets forgotten.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, all right, so wait, let's look at, like, our lifetime.
Okay.
All right, what still gets remembered as far as, like, tragedy? Obviously, 9/11.
9/11 obviously gets remembered. All
right, 9/11 gets remembered. Chernobyl.
Chernobyl gets remembered.
Yeah. Okay. Challenger.
Yeah. Challenger. All right. Phantom Menace.
Is the Challenger, like, widely remembered? Like, I'm talking about, like, people younger than us.
Mm-hmm.
Would they know the Challenger?
They may have heard of it, but they may mix it in with the Columbia explosion. And because when the Columbia explosion happened, that was almost like, well, no big deal. The shuttles are on their way out.
I kind of forgot about that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm mixing that up.
Yeah, they killed the same number of people, but the first one was like the bucket of water in the face.
I honestly think the reason people remember the Challenger is universally people watched it at school lunch.
Right. And I didn't. My school decided not to show it.
Mm-hmm. They had a premonition.
I don't know.
Fever's dream out there in Green Bay.
Or that the parochial school nuns just couldn't figure out how the AV system worked. They could show a video, but they didn't want to try to get live feed.
All right, so this is... At my work,
okay,
they were doing a play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the play was about... The teacher, who's Christina...
Oh, Christina McAuliffe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was her daughter and her. It was called Defying Gravity. So there was a play about them. So they did the school play.
Mm-hmm.
And before the show, the drama teacher gets up there to introduce the play.
Yeah.
And she introduces it this way. She says, "All right, everybody." And she has a very drama teacher way of speaking.
Okay.
"This is a play. It's about... the teacher that went into space and exploded."
Those were her words.
Those were exact words. I couldn't contain my laughter at this.
No, I'm guessing she didn't write this down. She thought, you know, I'm going to go.
I'm up there, I'm going to wing it. I got this. I took a year of improv.
I'm going to be respectful. I'm going to make make poetic allusions.
Yes, and
it's not all going to come off funny.
I had a class at UCB. I can handle this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it was about, as if, like, the teacher's the one who caused the explosion. Like, she just blew up, and then the rest of the shuttle followed.
Now I shouldn't even make that joke, but I was thinking about the expression blowing up to mean, like, you're getting a phone call, mm-hmm. which I always thought was really, really over the top. Like, no, you're not super popular. You're getting one phone call. This is not a sign of popularity. It's a sign of a human being trying to call you.
You remember how quickly the jokes came out about that?
I think jokes come out faster every time. Like, if you're on Twitter...
But this is before Twitter. This is before, like, literally, I remember, like... Like, let's say it happened on, like, a Monday, like, Tuesday.
Right.
Like, a bunch of jokes ready to go about, like, was her last words, what does that thing do?
Oh, God. I guess I didn't know that there were challengers. You know, I'm assuming there were.
I still remember them, yeah.
Yeah, now you're going to tell me them.
Yeah, oh, God, what was the other one? What color were her eyes?
I don't know.
Blue. One blew that way, the other blew that way. Which I think is probably just a repurposed joke anyway, you know? But yeah, right away, boom, people had the jokes ready to go.
Wow. Now, I think some of it could be their people's honest way of grieving, making jokes about it because it's too painful to think about. And some of it could just be being D-bags.
Well, I mean, when the Challenger, when the teacher exploded, rather.
yeah, use the correct terminology, please.
Yeah, I think I was probably like 9 or something like that. Yeah. You know? And, I don't think that we were really grieving as 9-year-olds. I think we just kind of went like, you know, like, oh, something happened. There's an explosion. Let's move on. Because you're 9 and you know, I'm going to go home and watch Cartoon Express.
Right. I have a very clear memory of my parents sitting me down and telling me that Captain Kangaroo had had a heart attack. And now...
You don't need to be told that. I mean, it didn't happen on air.
No, it didn't happen on air, but I
assumed... Bob Keeshan had a heart attack. Captain Kangaroo's fine.
Yeah. I assumed that that meant every single time I would watch Captain Kangaroo, the whole show would just be him having a heart attack and being filmed while no one went to his aid.
Because just dropping ping pong balls on him as he's clutching his chest.
And I was so scared to watch Captain Kangaroo because I didn't want it to be that episode. I always felt like I was dodging a bullet.
Why did they have to sit you down to tell you this? Was it like were they like, oh, we want to make sure that, you know, Jeff hears it from us and not from...
I understand that thing as a parent now. When I hear about something bad, like the terrorist attack in Paris last year, I feel like, well, I can't hide this from my kids, but I don't want to sit down and tell them either. So maybe I should just say something bad happened in Paris and we need to be sad for a little bit about all the people who died and not go into any more detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, my kids are little. They're oblivious to everything.
Right.
You know. So I can get around that for a little while, at least.
Okay, we're moving on to the topic of the week. This is the big one, because I have the honor, I have the privilege of talking about Son of Tarzan, the 1917 effort by Edgar Rice Burroughs. It is the 4th book in the Tarzan franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before I dive into this, I want to find out from you what your background on Tarzan is.
You know, I don't know a ton about it. I think I may have attempted to read a Tarzan book when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like I'm talking like when I was like 11 years old.
Okay.
I remember going to the library and going like, oh, I'll read a Tarzan book. And then didn't really bother. But it's like, right. Yeah, I already cut into it. I know enough of the story to fake it.
Yeah. Did you see the Disney movie?
Yes. Okay. I've seen the Disney movie.
Did you see the one that came out last year?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
I saw that.
Is that the one with the rocks in that one, right?
No. No, you're thinking of Hercules.
That's it, yes.
Yeah. No, this is...
I didn't see either.
I don't think we have to talk about Hercules anytime in the podcast. But for Tarzan, he could have been a credible Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my background on Tarzan. I saw the Disney movie. I watched the one that came out last year, just a few days ago. And I have read all 4 of the Tarzan books needed to read Son of Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 4th in the series. Okay, here's the quick summation. The first Tarzan has a lot of what is now your standard Tarzan food. An ape man raised by apes after his parents died, and then he becomes king of the apes.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't know was that they are not gorillas, and they're not chimps.
Orangutans.
No. Edgar Rice Burroughs decided to...
Gibbons.
...to make up a new species of apes, which he called the Mangani, which I really am going to try to not ever say mangina, because it's very close, but it's Mangani. And that's reflected in the most recent movie, where they're shown as looking like gorillas, but about, like, 1.5 times bigger. And
now, was there a reason that he did this, or was it simply, like, he does about as much research as we do?
He does even less research than we do. He just decided, I'm going to make it up. The same way that if you were writing about someone crashed in a desert island, you may not open up a book of geography on Vanuatu in order to research the desert island. You'd say, the guy's stuck in a desert island. Doesn't mm-hmm. matter where he is. He's just on a desert island. So Edgar Rice Burroughs, my boy, EB. Should I say that or no? Never again?
EB.
Edgar Burroughs.
I think you got the rice in there. ERB.
ERB?
Herb.
Okay. Herb.
My buddy Herb.
Okay. So, Herb decided he was just going to make up an ape species because it was still the age of exploration, the tail end of it. He didn't need to know about chimps. He just made something up. So, Tarzan becomes a king of the apes, and then bad guys, Europeans, come in, explorers, and they have Jane with them.
Mm-hmm.
And Tarzan eventually falls in love with Jane. The way he attacks bad guys... sounds like something that bad guys would do, which is that he would tie a noose out of a vine, and there'd be like a group of 6 of them walking the mm-hmm. walking along the jungle, and he'd lower the noose along the sixth guy, and then strangle him, and just leave him dangling. Then make another one, and get the fifth guy, and leave him dangling, and everyone's looking around like, hey, where'd the other guys go?
How does he get the noose around their neck? They walk into it?
Or he just kind of Tarzans his way in. Like, he drops it over their head, and then yanks them up with mm-hmm. his man-ape strength.
I think with his man-ape, you just go down there and physically fight them, right?
Yeah, but this is more stealthy.
I know, it just seems... I don't know. It doesn't seem very heroic.
No, it doesn't. It's very villainous in a lot of ways.
Yes.
You were literally stringing people up and killing them.
Yes, and leaving them as like a message to the rest.
Yeah. Yeah. One interesting note. He learns English, but first he learns French.
Mm-hmm.
So Tarzan speaks with a French accent. Now, this is dropped like in the second and third book, where they just mention that he speaks English, and they never mention that he speaks French, or that he spoke French first, or that he's speaking with a French accent. But I think that's one of the reasons why when they made the 1980s Greystoke movie, they cast Christopher Lambert, who is French, because then he could do a French accent.
Is that the only one where Tarzan's had a French accent?
I think so, but mm-hmm. There's a lot of Tarzans out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard like Johnny Weissmuller made the most, but there's like eight other guys who played Tarzan,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to do that much research. So, the first Tarzan ends in the state of Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
because Jane is from Wisconsin, and Tarzan follows her all the way back just to make sure that she has a good life, and he finds out along the way that he is an English lord named John Clayton, but he decides to not claim his title because Jane is engaged to someone else who has that title and would lose it if Tarzan says, I'm the real John Clayton, I'm the real Earl of Greystoke.
Is this still the first book?
This is still the first
book. All right, we're not going to do... All right, can we skip ahead, please? Skip ahead. I'm glazing over here.
Okay, so...
Give me a quick summation, my God.
Okay, a quicker summation of Tarzan 2. There's bad guys who are Russians. And the Russians are not like the communists that we're used to seeing, because mm-hmm. this is before communism. Yeah. So the Russians were all shown as like evil aristocrats.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say Russian, you hear aristocrat.
Well, that things change in how, even if like we, you know, still make people bad guys, it's just, mm-hmm. I think now like Russians are more like Russian mob type.
Right. Yeah.
You know, whereas before, yeah, you had your like communist ones. Now they're kind of like Russian mob bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Arabs have changed. Right, as far as, like, you know, usually when they're depicted as bad guys now, we're going with, like, they're terrorists. Whereas the other ones, are, like, if you look at the old ones, they're like, mysterious.
Right.
Got mysterious guys in fezes.
Yeah, there's an Arab in Oklahoma, of all things.
Yeah.
And he's not shown as being evil, just sort of, like...
Like, wealthy, weird,
like,
right?
The new guy.
Yeah, like from the Orient.
Yeah. Okay, so Tarzan is on a ship in the second one, going back to England or somewhere. He joins the French Foreign Legion. He stops the Russian aristocrats from cheating at cards, which is apparently a really big thing in literature the first half of the 20th century. The way you establish a villain is you establish that he's a card cheat, and then bring in that he also wants to take over the world.
They stop them by, like, you know, hanging them from a...
they throw him off of the ship, and then he washes up on shore and finds a lost city full of diamonds. Mm-hmm. So then he becomes like a billionaire, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And in the third one, called The Beasts of Tarzan, he has a baby at that point named Jack.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to know to get up to Son of Tarzan.
Do people, even when he's no longer Tarzan, now he knows his real, you know, background, do people still call him Tarzan?
That's a good question. For the most part, no. They call him Lord Greystoke or John Clayton.
Oh, I find it so disappointing.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, he's Tarzan. Can we just start calling him Tarzan?
Tarzan, I think, means man-ape. I've already forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
The books are not written at, like, a very high level. So if you're, like, a fifth or sixth grader, you can read it without problem.
Not me when I was a sixth grader, apparently.
Yeah, you tapped out. But that's partly because of how it's written. Like, I could give you a random paragraph, and if I ask how many of these people are human, who's an elephant, and which one of these is a Mangani, you wouldn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone's just kind of written the same. Like, someone's being called a base villain, or someone is all innocent, and just like, wait, Wait, you should really mention that we're talking about an elephant here.
Right? But just occasionally just have him like eat like a trunk full of peanuts.
Yeah, elephants come off pretty good. Europeans come off pretty badly. Almost all of them are villains. Tarzan comes off incredibly well. Every sentence is about how masculine and heroic and strong and smart he is. Mm-hmm. He's like the most cultured guy, but also the most violent.
Mm-hmm.
And his son, Jack, meets one of Tarzan's ape friends when they're living in England.
And he has his child with Jane.
Yes, he has his child with Jane. And Tarzan, or John Clayton, has never told his son, Jack, that he grew up in the wilds of Africa.
So whenever you say John Clayton, I keep thinking of the football animals.
Yeah, just... I'll say Tarzan then.
Okay.
Okay, so Tarzan's son, Jack, meets an ape friend who's like in a traveling circus, and somehow he decides, well, I want to go back to Africa. I want to see where my dad grew up. And he gets kidnapped by the same Russians from the last couple of books. And then the Russians die once they take him back to Africa. But then he basically spends the next 10 years on his own. There's hardly any Tarzan in this book. It's all Son of Tarzan. And it's like a reboot because Jack gets a new name, which is Korak. Korak means the killer.
Yes, Korak, the magnificent, okay? The seer of seers. Mm-hmm.
So, most of the book, you're watching Korak, the killer, have a sort of Blue Lagoon relationship with a girl who's been kidnapped by an Arab sheik named Miriam. And they fall in love.
May you be kidnapped by an Arab sheik named Miriam. I'm Korak.
We're not old, we're just doing Johnny Carson impressions in the year 2017.
The envelope, please, Tarzan.
So there is a lot of this book that is uncomfortable to read 100 years later. Some of it is just what's called presentism, which is that, like, 100 years from now, we're going to be seen as terribly prejudiced and sexist and racist and all sorts of ists that we're not even aware of. Because we're living in modern culture, and 100 years from now, culture is going to be different.
The envelope, the manginist.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough of Karnak. Like, they use the word bwana a lot, which means boss. They use the word negress a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. And every time I heard it, I was like, oh, can we... Maybe we can change that.
Whenever you read that term, you realize whoever is saying this term actually thought that they were right. They were progressive, yeah.
Right?
Actually, like mm-hmm. I'm referring to it. I'm referring to them as a woman. In a proper, polite way.
Yeah. Why would a word be invented unless I was to use it?
Yeah. Like whoever is saying negress
mm-hmm.
is meaning it is actually like the Bernie Sanders of their time.
Yes. Another word I did not expect to read was G-string. The loincloth was actually called a G-string. Yeah. I didn't know that word was a full 100 years old.
What did the G stand for?
I don't know. I don't want to Google it.
Why?
Hmm?
Why not?
Oh, yeah. They have like safe search, so I can just safe search and then look for G-string, and then no one will know what I...
All right, let me... I'll do it on the old phone here.
Okay. While you do that, I'll tell you...
I'm interested in what the...
That... The elephant in the Tarzan series is named Tantor, which is interesting because there's a publishing company called Tantor Media, which is named after the elephant. And the book I read was published by Tantor Media, which I don't know if they did that because they feel like an obligation because they name themselves after a Tarzan animal, that they have to publish all the Tarzan books.
Is Tarzan something that, like, is, you know, do you need to actually have the rights to Tarzan?
No, it's in public domain.
That's what I figured, yeah. And that's why they do a movie every couple of years.
Right.
Do these movies do well? Do they make money, these movies?
I think they did. I think,
really?
Yeah, I think the one that came out made like $400 million. So, something else that has a lot of double meanings nowadays, they kept talking about Tantor the elephant exploring around with his sensitive member, which was how they decided to refer to the word trunk, because I guess you couldn't say trunk all the time. So, his sensitive member would reach out and explore people's faces. They're like, oh. It's not coming across the way you're intending. They also talk about a rough trader, which is not what we think of
mm-hmm.
with the sensitive members. So Tarzan does not go looking for his son Jack slash Korak. Tarzan thinks his son is dead. He thinks that the Russian bad guys killed him. But he then decides to move down to Africa to live out his remaining days with Jane. And like 10 years later, he meets the adult Korak.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this reunion in the last couple of pages of the book. But all I could think was, it's fine in the Tarzan story when Tarzan's parents, you don't know anything about, you're pretty sure they're on their way out on the first page when they go on their way out. You don't mourn them too much because you don't know them. Tarzan never knew them growing up. But you do know Tarzan and you do know Jane. And you don't get a sense of their loss until the very end when they talk about how terrible this was. And that was hanging over my head the whole time I was reading this book.
Is this the final Tarzan book?
Hell no.
Oh.
This is the fourth of 24 Tarzan books.
All right, but you're not going to tell me all of them, are you?
No, okay. But I will tell you that they basically gave up on the idea of telling Tarzan's life story, and every story after this was just, it takes place sometime during these four books.
Mm-hmm.
They were a lot of short stories and then like untold tales of Tarzan. It's a lot like what they did with Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like in the first Sherlock Holmes book, he and Watson meet and have their romance thing. But in the second book, John Watson says, okay, I've moved out, I'm married, I've got my own life now, I don't have anything to do with Sherlock Holmes anymore, but here's an interesting story from the time we were together.
Mm-hmm.
That's the second book. And there's like 8 more books and 50 short stories. And all of them are apparently flashbacks because he was just done by the second book. And I think that was the author deciding, I just don't want to write Sherlock Holmes anymore. I'm gonna write him out. And I think that's the same thing with Edgar Rice Burroughs. He wasn't trying to write a series. Because each one of these books has a very definitive end.
Is Sherlock Holmes still a franchise, movie franchise?
Yeah, the Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, they're still doing it?
Yeah. I think they're making a third. And the ones with Benedict Cumberbatch and BBC do really well.
Well, yeah, I knew that. Yeah. I meant the movies. I don't know if they were.
Yeah, I think that's still going on. And there's a movie called Holmes and Watson that's coming out. With Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly playing Holmes and Watson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't think it's serious.
No.
No. Although, I guess it could be a meta-comedy if they made absolutely no jokes.
Yeah, they should. Play completely straight.
Right. Okay, we move on to birthdays. Having a birthday this week is Carson McCullers, who was born February 19th. She was a Southern Gothic writer. Here's where I admit I have never read a Carson McCullers book. I don't think you have either.
No.
No. And we're both pretty good readers.
But I know what Southern Gothic is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can't read everything.
All right.
I get her mixed up with Cormac McCarthy a lot.
Mm-hmm. No, Cormac. Cormac.
Stop that. But Cormac McCarthy is still alive, and Carson McCullers died about 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Also having a birthday this week is Sidney Sheldon.
Yes.
Yes, he was born in February of 1917. I have a quiz for you, but first, have you read a Sidney Sheldon book?
No, I haven't. Okay. But
mom's read.
I remember, like, you know, moms on a beach
reading
this.
Yeah, I read one of them when I was, like, in high school because I wanted to see what
you
this
need
was
to
like.
Be in, like, you know, the old, like, you know, 1980s mom bathing suit.
Yeah.
You know, a bathing suit with a skirt on it.
Yeah, so the plot, if I can remember, was a woman who was living in the Midwest. And then her husband dies in a car crash, so she needs to raise her kids on her own. Then she gets called by a mysterious benefactor that she's been made the ambassador to Romania. So she gets to go on a whirlwind romance.
A benefactor can just do that?
Yep. Yeah. In these books, she can. And then there's like a light spy story. There's some Cold War intrigue. There's some surprisingly X-rated sex scenes that are written about.
Mm-hmm. Now, how old were you when you read this?
I was, like, in high school.
Did you get all hot and bothered?
No, because it was basically an assault scene. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that these sorts of books, if they were going to include sexual content, would include, like, assault.
Oh, so this was not, like, a consensual sexual act.
No, it wasn't. No, and I wasn't used to things being described so graphically.
What the hell were people reading on the beach in the 80s?
Yeah, I think it's like if you... It was like Game of Thrones not in the... In the content, not in the, you know, like in the nudity and violence and language, that people felt like they're more adult if they're reading stuff that their kids can't read.
Mm-hmm.
So the more of that you put in, the better. You know, the sleeve cells or whatever it was.
I would love to see a little, like, you know, 16-year-old Jeff reading a Sidney Sheldon novel.
Shocked and appalled. My glasses steaming up. So, because I don't want to quiz you about books that neither one of us have read, I'm going to give you a quiz about people named Sidney or people named Sheldon.
Perfect.
Okay. Okay, here's the first one to hit you with. The star of the show, Alias. Did you watch Alias?
No.
No.
Sidney.
Sidney Bristow.
Yes. There
you
go.
Okay, you guessed correctly. Star of The Big Bang Theory.
I'll just call him Sheldon.
Sheldon.
Another one I've never seen.
Sheldon Cooper.
Big Bang Theory for me is the show that's on, like, when I'm watching something, whatever I'm watching ends. Big then Bang Theory. And, like, so.
He's always next.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, wait, I know the theme to that. Let me turn it off.
Okay. Name me Sidney or Sheldon, who's a Las Vegas billionaire.
Oh, that's, what's it, Sheldon,
Sheldon Adelson.
Adelson, yes. Yeah.
All you needed was Sidney or Sheldon.
Yeah.
Okay. Name the city that shows up in Finding Nemo.
Hmm. Let's see.
You have young kids.
I know.
You should know this.
I know. I must have tuned out at this point. We've seen Finding Nemo a lot. I'm usually drunk by the time.
Well, actually, it shows up at the end.
Yeah. All right, yes. No, there's a Sheldon. He's a turtle.
There was a seahorse named Sheldon, but I was looking for the city of Sydney, Australia.
Oh, the city. Okay.
Yeah, the city.
Why is there not a turtle? A turtle shell, right?
Well, there's a seahorse named Sheldon. I guess they went for a slightly less obvious pun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, who is the composer of A Boy Named Sue, the Johnny Cash song?
Shel Silverstein.
Very good, very good. The scariest looking person to ever write a children's book.
Put
a giant face on the back.
And a giant beard, bald head.
I feel like some sort of Brewster's Millions deal. Like, we're going to publish a book, but we're going to try to make it the worst thing possible. We're going to hire you, who can't draw, to draw every picture. We're going to put your monster face on the back.
And most of your poetry, while touching poems about children, will involve old people dying. There's a lot of old people dying in his poems.
Oh, speaking of old people dying, my next question. Name me Jack Lemmon's character from Glengarry Glen Ross.
Shelley the Machine Levine.
Yes, very good. Okay, and for bonus points, which Simpsons character is inspired by Shelley Levine?
Gil.
Yep. Okay, now naming the director of 12 Angry Men.
Oh, wait, hold on. Why don't I know this?
Why do you know this, or why don't you?
Why don't I?
Oh, he directed a whole bunch of other things. He did Dog Day Afternoon. He did Murder on the Orient Express. He did Serpico. Big in the 70s. Huge streak.
I know this. I know it's a Sidney.
Yeah, Sidney Lumet.
Yeah. I kept wanting to say Sidney Pollack, but I knew that wasn't it.
I found out while I was researching my Sidneys and my Sheldons that a connection. Death Wish was originally written, you know Death Wish?
Yes.
Yeah. It was originally written for Jack Lemmon, who played famous Shelley, to be directed by Sidney Lumet.
Mm-hmm.
But instead they got Charles Bronson, who's not really believable as like an everyman, but much more believable as a vigilante.
Yeah. I was see Jack Lemmon going around like, you know, like shooting bad guys.
Yeah, that's a whole different movie.
Yeah, Jack Lemmon on the streets.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a believable milquetoast guy who snapped, mm-hmm. Not someone who you're just waiting to whip out a gun.
Yeah, and I want him walking around in his Glengarry suspenders.
Okay, three more. Who is the director of Tootsie who I always mix up with Sidney Lumet?
Sidney Pollack,
very good.
There we go.
Who is the Bahamian actor who won a Lifetime Achievement Oscar? Hard to get those.
Hmm.
You need to have done a lifetime of work and also not get an Oscar.
I don't know.
Sidney Poitier,
yeah.
Yeah, okay. He's from the Bahamas.
That's what threw me off. So I didn't know he's Bahamian. There we go.
Bahamian, yep. Okay, and our last one. Who is a co-star of the film Casablanca?
Sidney Greenstreet,
yes. Harry Knowles called him the best fat man of all time in cinema.
You think so?
I don't think so. Harry Knowles thinks so.
Who do you think is the best fat man of all time?
Oh, I should have I should have realized when I was going to redirect it to you that you're going to redirect it right back to
me. It's fucking Goodman.
Okay, but John Goodman in what?
In everything.
In everything?
Yes.
Okay, I'll go Walter Sobchak. In, that's his character in Big Lebowski.
Okay, but, or you could go with, just if you want to go, don't want to go for, you know, a more obvious fat guy, you can go with the guy who played Tiny in Roadhouse.
We're going from strength to strength.
Yes.
Yeah. Big Lebowski, one of the best comedies of all time. A film that you and I saw in the theater. That's hardly it. Anyone can say we saw it in the theater.
We did. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that concludes this week in 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. Next week, we'll be talking to you about the restaurant Delmonico's. Until then, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy, Jeff.